Okay, session number three. We'll begin with an overview of everything we covered until now.
Even doubtful danger to life overrides the Torah prohibitions of Shabbat, Yom Kippur, non-kosher food. The reason I put those examples is because that's what we saw in the Gemaras and Shulchan Aruch. Obviously, it overrides almost everything, but we saw those as examples. And we saw that even though the Gemara gives lots of suggestions for what it's based on, the two kind of that are quoted in Halacha are, one is Chalel Lav Shabbat Zachas, Kedesh Yishmer Shabbos Hasharbe, violate one so you can observe many. And then the main reason it gives us V'chai Behem, and we saw like the Bir Halacha on that argues that all human life, no matter the ability to interact with others or whatever it is, has value, and we prolong life even if someone does not have capabilities of interacting or what other people might consider a meaningful life, we still value that life, and that was based on V'chai Behem. We said that when someone overrides Shabbat in these cases, it's actually a mitzvah to do so, and that's part of Shabbat observance. It's not a violation. It's not violating Shabbat. It's that's part of observing Shabbos, is to have to break Shabbos sometimes. It's not breaking. It's observing. When in doubt, don't ask, and it's a spiritual leader's responsibility to teach this to their community. And there should at least, we discussed, and we'll talk about this much more today, there should at least be some sort of logic or proof that the intended therapy that overrides Shabbat may be effective, but we'll go into that further. And if one would do the act during the week, we're talking about someone just dangerously ill, they should do it on Shabbat. If they wouldn't wait during the week, they shouldn't wait. They can do it right away on Shabbat as well. We did say, though, that the majority opinion is that Shabbat is dechuya for saving a life. It's pushed off, but it's not utra, according to most opinions. So it's best when possible, and if it doesn't pose any danger, to minimize the prohibitions that we do. But when in doubt, we don't follow the majority. Rather, if there's any chance of saving a life, even for a very short time, we do so. We also don't have to follow the majority opinion of postgame. We rely on the lenient opinions. And although the Talmud doesn't permit violating Shabbat prohibitions to save a non-Jew, that was in the Talmud, but it has become the accepted practice that we must do so. And the reasons it gave is because, oh, it'll cause hatred of Jews, or non-Jewish doctors won't treat Jews equally, or nowadays word will travel very fast and it looks bad. Whatever it is, the halacha lamaisa that became that we do treat everyone equally when it comes to saving life on Shabbat. That how we got there is one thing, but that's the fact is that is the what we say. We also override Shabbat for potential illnesses, only if the illness is actually lifaneinu now, like we see that it's there, or if the rodef, that illness, that issue that could become the concern that causes one to be ill already exists. So if you can identify what it is, we talked about the example of even genes sometimes, but when it comes to Shabbos, it would have to be something that's actually having an impact on one's health at that time, or that will in the future if they don't violate Shabbat or Yom Kippur right now. We also saw that sometimes the concept of Bekuach Nefesh could be expanded beyond Shabbat issues. We gave examples of freeing an Iguna or ability to have children are sometimes quoted in the postgame as also being Bekuach Nefesh. When a doctor says that one must violate Shabbat, then we have to listen to them, even if just one says so and 100 say we don't need to. Or even if the doctor is not Jewish or not an expert, whatever it is, we listen to doctors, and even if it's the minority, and we also believe the patient's needs, unless an expert says that particular act will actually be harmful to the patient, but otherwise we trust the patient's, the individual's evaluation of what they need. Also, we talked about returning home from a life-saving journey. The Gemara says you can turn within 2,000 amos of that city, that becomes your new dwelling place. Though some say, now returning to the modern issue, the Gemara that there debated, you know, returning with weapons, carrying weapons, in the Rishus HaRabim. And so it seemed to be that there might be potential for overriding Torah prohibitions to return home, but that might just be specific to weapons in a battle situation. So some say that one can return home in a car driven by a non-Jew if they have no other option, because we can violate certainly rabbinic prohibitions to return home from a life-saving mission. And in some say, and that was Rav Moshe Feinstein, in cases of great need, Torah prohibitions could also be overridden and therefore a person could drive home. And also, certainly, if a doctor or Hatzalah, whatever it is, nurse, needs to drive back because they will likely be called again and they need to be back home or wherever they need to be in order to be able to be available to save lives again, then they certainly could go back. So that was session number one. So that took us 90 minutes and we went really in-depth and told stories and talked about it, but that's basically the summary. Then yesterday, we talked about was just the categories. And it can be very, you know, confusing and complex when learning the sources, but, you know, once we like kind of chart it out, it's much clearer. And basically, the first thing was what we talked about above, the first day was Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. Once someone is dangerously ill, we do everything necessary for them immediately. Then there's the category of Sakana Aver, which is not just risking a limb, but also risking losing the full capabilities of that limb if they're not treated on Shabbat. And someone who, and we said Sakana Aver, someone who's not Jewish could violate a Torah prohibition. A Jew could as well, but they're supposed to use a Shinui, unless there's a concern for more serious danger, or do rabbinic violations in the normal manner. That was all for Sakanas Aver. Originally, danger to limb was just the same as Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana, but today we assume that it could be more dangerous, like to the entire body or to a person, to have danger to their limb, and therefore we are more lenient about danger to limb today than we were in the Gemara and even in the Shulchan Aruch. Then the next category was Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana, in which case we can ask a non-Jew to do anything. Jew can do rabbinic prohibitions with the Shinui, or even Torah prohibitions in a case of great need. That's for Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. We define that. I should put that here too. But that was defined as someone who is either nafal mishkav, they have to lay down, or they have a systemic Chol Kol Haguf. Their whole body just doesn't feel right. They're just not feeling right. And we saw that it's not that high of a bar to get into the category of Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. And then we have the categories of Miksat Choli or Mitzta'er, in which case someone who's not Jewish can do rabbinically prohibited actions for that person. So, obviously all this requires a lot of knowledge about what's considered Derabanan and Deraisa. And then something that's just a Mechush Ba'alma, very, very minor, someone not feeling good, then nothing can be done, not medication, nothing. Then we said childbirth from active labor till 3 days postpartum, bless you, is considered Chola She'ein Ba Sakana, and we can do anything for her. Ideally, though, using a Shinui, the Mishnah Berurah said that was because giving birth is a natural thing, and therefore it's considered to be slightly less dangerous than the other, life-threatening things, but we still are just, in case of doubt, we are very cautious and can do anything necessary for a woman giving birth or just who has just given birth. And then day 4 to 7, still Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana, but if she says she doesn't need something, then it shouldn't be done. Then day 8 to 30 was a category of Chol Sheyein Bo Sakana, in which case a Jew may only do rabbinic prohibitions with a Shinui, or non-Jew can do anything. And also this all applied, we said, to miscarriages, to abortions, cesarean delivery, or any complications. Also obviously change these. And then we said, I don't remember if I showed this or not, but the Nishmas Avram wrote at length that asking someone who's not Jewish is always better than asking for a Jew to do something with a Shinui, halakhically at least. And then we just mentioned a few side points about, for example, danger to eye is assumed to have a higher risk. Very light pain doesn't allow Shabbat violation, but stronger pain of the eye can be addressed with eye drops or cream. And obviously severe danger to the eye can be addressed by any necessary Shabbat Torah violations. Then we talked about makah shel halal, and that's treated as a Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana, depending on level of pain. High fever over 102 is treated as Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana, dangerously ill. That was what the Gemara refers to that. And then danger to hands and feet caused by being struck by iron. Those were, in Chazal, they were concerned about them, but we only treat them differently if a medical professional says to. And then kids, I left this out last time I realized. So just real quick, the Shulchan Aruch says, Mutar lomar leinu yudula, so tav shel katan she'ein lo ma lechol, destam tzorchei katan kechola she'ein bo sakana dami. Anything that a child needs is automatically considered a chola, so that we can either do rabbinic prohibitions of the Shinui or ask a non-Jew to do. And there's a big debate about what age that is. Many say it's up to age 3, but there's some say to age 6, and some even say till age 9. Any child just automatically, it doesn't mean they're sick at all. They feel totally fine, but we can treat them with a lot of this heterim that we have for a Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. And finally, we discussed treating chronic pain as a Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. That was the kind of like the mainstream view, but that there, maybe we can see it as more like a makah shel halal, or concern that it could lead to danger to life, and therefore we can treat chronic pain more seriously, or we can treat with whatever they need, even rabbinic prohibitions based on the principle of tzarich anid, because just like when someone says, I need this, we have the right to violate Yom Kippur, or even Shabbos, for their needs. And so too, when it comes to chronic pain. I forgot to say, I think about this story all the time, so it's just a funny little memory of mine, but I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in a Chabad shul here in LA, and I remember one time that we always thought like the Chabad rabbi, they're like, the most religious people ever, right? So I really looked up to my rabbis, and I remember that one time one of the rabbis had a baby on Shabbos, and they drove to the hospital, and I remember asking about it and saying, like, you know, what was that like? He was like, oh, it was the craziest thing, you know, because in L.A., I don't know, I think they have had them everywhere now, but, you know, in L.A., the really popular restaurant is In-N-Out. Everyone wants to try In-N-Out. It's like, everyone loves it. So he was like, it was great. We were driving to the hospital, and I was like, oh, I can drive to the hospital. I can get In-N-Out. So it was finally my chance. I got In-N-Out. Obviously, he was like, no, I was joking, but, you know, that's when I think about the whole Hutra and Dehuya. That's where I always remember that, because he taught me that thing. He's like, nope, Shabbat is only Dehuya and Kuch Nefesh. I can only do what we had to do. So anyways, that was, like, formative for me. So that was, like, my little memory of Dehuya versus Hutra. But also with these categories, Rabbanit Devor said she would check. Let's look at two categories today. One that is I don't find so satisfying, but it's interesting. It's important to be aware of, I think. And then one that I personally find very satisfying in terms of when we talk about, like, something being built out too much or not enough. I mean, I use this a lot. I find it to be just really compelling and interesting. So the first one to share, and we're just going to do this briefly, but it's important, is Kavod HaBrios. Just because I thought we should, because it does come up. I myself have situations in the hospital on a regular basis where working with someone on what they can and can't do, it turns out that Kavod HaBrios is the right category for it. So there's a very interesting Gemara. Obviously, we're just taking a little piece of it, but it says as follows. And I know most Gemaras we didn't read together, but I think this one's worth reading together right now. Amar Le Abaye the Rav Yosef, Yardu Le Gashamim V'Nishtashtashtu. So now talking about a stone that could be used, like, as a pestle, right? Like, it could be used for tochein, like we talked about, which you would not be allowed, that would become muksa on Shabbos, or it could be used as a wiping stone. I mean, it's a little weird, but I mean, I think some of us might be aware that, like, in the ancient world, or maybe not ancient isn't even the right word, but in Talmudic times, that's how they wiped themselves after using the restroom. They used stones. And those obviously were not muksa because they were needed on Shabbos. So, but what happens if it was rained on and it got clean, and therefore someone might not know that it's a wiping stone, and then they might use it as a pestle again, in which case it's now concerned that it would be muksa. So Amar Leh, Im Haya Rishumo Nikar Mutar. As long as you can sort of see that that it had been used for those purposes, for wiping, then it's still allowed to be used on Shabbos. Bamini Rabba Bar Rav Shila Me Rav Chista. Maula lo sum ach rav legad. But what about bringing it, the tircha involved, and bringing it up to the roof? Someone wants to use, let's say that's where their restroom, that's where they wanted to use the restroom. Amar Leh, Gadol Kavod HaBrios Shedocha Es Lo Taseh Shebetorah. Since it's a concern of Kavod HaBrios, we can bring it up there even though it's violating a concern of Tircha. By the way, even though he says Lo Taseh Shebetorah, Rashi points out there, what's the Lo Taseh? The Lo Taseh is the Lo Tasur. It's actually, the whole concern is, it's actually overrides rabbinic prohibitions. The Torah says you have to listen to the rabbis and go to Kavod HaBrios. Most opinions are that it actually just overrides rabbinic concerns. Anyways, that when it comes to, you know, using the restroom because of the privacy and the embarrassment potentially involved, we want to give people the basic human dignity of being able to have privacy. And so that Kavod HaBrios can override certain concerns. Also, there's another thing. Yasi Maremar V'Kamar La Laha Shemaita. Esve Ravina Lememar. Rav Eliezer Omer. So what about this? No tel adam kisem mishalafanav lachsos boshinav. Can a person just take like a piece of wood and break off like a toothpick on Shabbos to pick their teeth? He says, yes, they could. We're not concerned that it's muksav, because he just found it. Only if it was there for feeding animals, in which case it's not muksa. Hachi hashta. Is that, you have to say that? Hasam adam kovea makom lezuda. Why were we not concerned about Kavod HaBrios when it came to picking one's teeth, that we had to worry that they couldn't break it off, but when it came to Kavod HaBrios, we were? Well, with Kavod HaBrios, adam kovea, I'm sorry, with the breaking the toothpick, adam kovea makom lezuda, you know where you're going to be eating your meals. So you should have a toothpick there from before Shabbos. But hacha, when it came to using the restroom, adam kovea makom levesa kisei. There should be a question mark there. Can a person really know where they're going to need to use the restroom, and therefore we're allowed to use Kavod HaBrios? So we already see that there's limits on it. There's a limit on if you're actually can't predict that you might have this need. And I'll show you a couple examples. So real quick, just because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this principle, but just to show you a few examples of how it gets used, halacha l'maisa, and how it's also limited, just some interesting stuff. So as a quick example, we'll just kind of walk through these. Shmir Shabbos quotes this concept, and I'm sorry, I make copies there. It came out a little bit not straight, but so we know it says ein korin niur niir toilet b'shabbat v'yom tov, right? You're not supposed to tear toilet paper on Shabbos. And then he goes through and says, well, you know, you could use regular paper if you need to, but you really can't be using, you can't cut paper. But then he says, what if you're in like to the middle there, he says, ain't look on here, see up. What if you even don't have writing paper? Who's up to clean your toilet, but you need to use the restroom? Yesh makum lahakel. Well, we can be lenient, mishum kavod habrios. Because this is exactly kavod habrios, exactly, basically the modern example of what that Gemara was about. Likroa near toilet kala acharyad. Dainu shiachzik et anir lo biyad. You can kind of grab it. Mafreik achay, kind of grab it with one elbow. Ilu b'mafreik ko hasheni akra'enu. And then like use your other elbow to tear it. I'm not really sure how that would look exactly, but whatever. Some kind of way of tearing it awkwardly. V'yadif l'kachat l'tzorach zeh near maglil. And it's better, he says, to use the rolls. Anyways, but you see here already, this exact example. You could, if you have to cut the toilet paper, you could, because this is kavod habrios. He says also chola. What if the person's sick? Afshein basakana v'hu merutak l'mitato, but they are connected to their bed, and whether they're in the hospital or at home, and they so they need to use the call button in order to use the restroom. So first, you know, he says basically he doesn't. It's better not to. He says only if it's lo chashmali, aval aser lo yishtamish b'pamon chashmali. But if you go into the end of that paragraph there, just the very end here, he says, but if you don't have any option for someone else to call for you or whatever, and a person really has to go, v'im ein ze efshari v'hu nitzrach 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 v'hu nitzrach. Even if it turns a light on, v'hitiru davar zeh gam shenidlak or, and even we allow this, even if it turns on a light, mishum gadol kavod habrios. Again, someone has to use the restroom. So you see just examples when it comes to needing to use the restroom, post-game end up finding heterim to allow it. There's a really interesting example of this in Nishmas Avraham. I just thought this was fascinating. It's talking about someone who has an insulin, a diabetic, who needs to have their insulin pump with them at all times. They can't go anywhere without it. So what are they going to do on Shabbos? They're going to be stuck. So he says, well, you could, you know, they could wear like some kind of a insulin needle, like inside of a belt. So once they're wearing it inside of a belt, here he says it here. Then it's only a derabanan, and because that's wearing it with the shinui, and then they could carry it. So, and then I just thought the reasoning, what he says here, just this part, I thought was really important. He says, ki hitiru isur midivrei mishum kavod habrios, they allowed rabbinic prohibitions because of kavod habrios, become a duber al shvus de shvus, taino hot sam, your shvus arrived in the carmelis, and bishinui. Vaya bishum rashav sil chasa, another example is, she'adam mitzonein me'od v'yesh mishum kavod habrios, hitiru isur terbonon, also someone's very cold. And here's what I thought was interesting. So why should this person though be allowed to go outside? Why not just say, stay inside for the whole Shabbos? So he says, Amrli Moriverabi, I'm pretty sure he's referring to again Amr of Neuver here, Shiesh Mishum Kavod Habrios, also Becholas Ukarit with this dialysis, the diabetic. For the diabetic patient, because that Kila lo heter canal, lo yuchal af pam, ko yime chayav, let's save me beto b'shabbat. They will never be able to leave their house. And then he adds, but it's only if there's a mitzvah kagon. A man or a woman, or to go to learn Torah. But only if it's actually for a very specific mitzvah. First of all, I thought this was a really interesting heter, that based in Kavod Habrios. And then I also thought it was interesting because Rabbi Linzer was asked this question in the Shoot for Rabbi Linzer WhatsApp group, and he allowed also going for a walk and going to a family gathering and going for a Shabbos meal. So I asked him privately, you know, I was just curious because I noticed that this Rav Neuwirth was very limiting. And he sent me a whole bunch of tshuvas that many poskim are much more expansive. So this is just, I saw this published, so I put it here on the sheet. But there's actually, this is actually somewhat or pretty strict, but it's much easier to justify going out. And a lot of this is based in Kavod HaBrios, also owning Shabbos and other concerns. But I just thought that was interesting that was what he used here, was Kavod HaBrios for that concern. Just one or two more before we go on to the main topic for today. I thought this was also interesting, just very relevant. And you see, again, related to when it comes to kind of having to use the restroom, im amnam hayelad hayartiv, a bedwetting child that's having problems with bedwetting, you know that some children, when they have problems with wetting the bed, so there's sometimes like little alarms you can put on their clothing that you snap it together, but it doesn't connect until it gets wet. When it gets wet, it like alarms and it wakes up the child, and this is part of the process of helping to potty train them. And so what about using that on Shabbos? It has a whole alarm system. It makes noise, it lights up. So in the initial sovereign, he was asked about this, and he said, and this is a child also. So he says, so what about if they have to, you know, the alarm goes off in the beginning of the night, and they have to, you know, redo the buttons. They have to change their pajamas now, right? That's one of my favorite Hebrew words. So what about that? So he says, Kivan Shemadubar Khan al Kavod HaBrios. This is a matter of, what are you going to make the kids stay in their wet pajamas, their, you know, soiled pajamas all night? So no, that's not Kavod HaBrios. Ye mutar la sozos bishinui dehainu im gav etzba, and you can snap it back into place. So again, it's just the same, that same principle that we see coming up over and over again. There are sometimes some limitations. This is a case about, you know, a person that also has to be plugged into an IV line and that pushes doses, you know, they need of medication into them. And to get to the restroom, they have to unplug it. So he writes here, and he's the same thing. He uses the phrase, I just thought this was important here, because he says, "Ach in hum it bayesh yishtamish b'sir b'cheder shnimsayim b'cholim acherim." But they don't want to have to use the restroom in like a pot, you know, when there's other people, it's embarrassing to them. So he says, again, because of Kavod HaBrios, they can ask someone who's not Jewish to unplug it, or they can unplug it with the shinui. He does say, he's interesting, he is machmir here about one aspect of it. He says, that's because that's Kavod HaBrios. But he says, on the other hand, he says, Me'idach, asur levakesh mi'akum la'sozos kedei l'mashal l'lecha l'beit ha'kaneset sh'beit ha'cholim. He felt like that's not enough of a reason to unplug from the IV. Again, I think that there's others who would disagree with that, but I'm just pointing out some of the interesting applications of Kavod HaBrios. And then here, just one. There's another one here. This one I just thought was interesting. Rav Shlomo Zalman was asked about someone who has to give a urine sample from their doctor, and they just give them the cup, and they say, take it home and just bring it back next week. So can they do it on Shabbos? So interestingly, he says, first of all, I don't think the cup is muksa, but I will not allow this because of Kavod HaBrios. That is not. Because why do you have to do it on Shabbos? That's exactly what the Gemara is saying, right? If you have a makom that you could be that you were koveya makom before Shabbos, then that's a problem. So he says shemutar lasosos gam b'shabbos afilu shezei rak mishum nuchia. Even if it's just for your convenience, it's fine. The ein al tzenet din shel muksa, etc. He says. The last one here. Ein lahatir mitam kavod HaBrios. But this is not kavod HaBrios. Ki yachol l'tachat yom kushpa. You can take a day off or something. Al cheshbono b'emesai shavua. You don't have to do it now. So I just wanted to show, I thought it was interesting that, you know, some limits to kavod HaBrios. And same thing, this last source, which I'll just summarize, the Shulchan Aruch again says basically exactly what that Gemara said. Ofte behema in behemi shum tikun kli. If something is prepared for an animal, it's not muksa. Fikach mutar li tom afilu b'sakin kasher teven lachsos boshinav. You could therefore take from it to pick your teeth. Aval kisim she'ino ochel behema afilu litlo kadei lachsos boshinav asur. But if it's muksa, we can't. And then he says, you know, the Mishnah Berurah there basically just says, so even though afti yesh b'zei mishum kavod HaBrios shepamim nira habasar b'nei shinayim, you sometimes have meat stuck in your teeth, lachutz v'genai hulo, and that's obviously going to be embarrassing. Afu became asur dehayelo lahachin kisei me'etmo b'makum shudei. You should have had a toothpick ready. You could have prepared that before Shabbos. Unless, though, he says, maybe if you were invited to someone's house, like on Shabbos, like at shul, so someone invites you and you didn't know you were going to be there, okay, maybe you could find a way. Then, you have to carry in public, you can carry maybe the toothpick. That could be justified then, maybe if that's something, especially if it's for you, a ganai, you're someone who's very concerned about it, and he writes there about how it's all dependent on that individual. And in fact, that leads to the summary of this whole topic, and then we'll just talk about it for a minute, and then I really want to spend most of our time on another topic. But the Piskei Tshuvos on the Mishnah Berurah summarizes as follows, and you see kind of the limits here and some of the potential, possibly, for extensions as well. He writes as follows: Kavod Habrios sheyatiru begino isurim shonim ikro hu rak b'makom bizayon ubusha. That's really the issue. Places where a person will be embarrassed. Ganai ve'ina imut ha'alul igrom la'adam hein busha gufanit vein busha machmas begin bechoda. Whether it's your bodily embarrassment or just your good name is compromised. Ubechalze pegiyah ha'goremet lebizayon lebushet la'adam afilu kishenu becheret b'nei. Even they're alone. Even it's just their reputation. About tsar v'seva v'tircha yaseira, but this does not cover tsar or pain or effort or hefset gadol, even monetary loss or lachatz v'charada nafshit k'tzmezer or fear. None of that stuff is in the category of kavod abrios. Kol elo enem bechlal hatera de kavod abrios. V'yesh lechas. It all depends on that individual. The fi mashu adam ki yesh davar shu bosh busha b'zayin etzel adam echad. It all depends on that person, that situation. But here's the sort of limitations to it. He says, "Vada ki medivri ha'tur v'shochanach v'shar poskim hacha ube'od makomos mukach ki hetera de kavod abrios who begeder de chuya v'lo hutra." Just like we talk about Shabbos in general, even within kuach nefesh, within that specifically, kavod abrios is only de chuya. It's We do only the minimal that we can do for that situation to protect the person's dignity. It's not like there's no iser at all. We still recognize it's prohibited, but we have to do it. That's why if you know that it might arise a situation of embarrassment, and you can do something to prevent it from happening, you can't just say like, oh, you know what? I don't have a restroom in my house this Shabbos, so therefore I can, drive to a local gas station. No, you have to prepare before Shabbos to figure out some kind of plan of what you're going to do, if you can plan ahead. This is the Shlis Yaakov. And I actually looked it up this morning because I was curious to see it inside. He says, Kevan shedehuya hiva lohutra, since it's only dehuya, Sarich kapara al shehutzrach la'avor al iser mipnei kavod abrios. You actually have to have, you actually need kapara for this. When it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, Kukuach Nefesh, the poskim say clearly, you don't need kapara, you didn't violate Shabbos. You have to violate Shabbos to save your life. But for some reason, and when it comes to kavod abrios, there is this like feeling among some of the poskim that's like, you shouldn't have had to do that. Like, okay, if you have to, we let it, but we don't want to get in that situation. His suggestion there is to pick a day to fast. If a person has to break Shabbos or come to Brios, they should fast. So I don't think we actually do that. I don't think we do that. But I'm just saying, I just thought it was interesting that they really limit the application of the use of human dignity for overriding prohibitions. There's another area that is much more expansive. But before we go there, any comments or reactions to that brief discussion? Yes, Dahlia.
I'm just thinking about what you said in terms of like the person being able to unplug in order to go to the Beit Knesset. Doesn't that seem like that would be a case, like the tefillin case that you had later on, of like somebody who would be distressed because they wouldn't be able to do their normal practice of halakha?
I think that's why. That's why we're going to go now to talk about this issue of Tirif Adat. But I think what he was trying to do in that piece was to limit how far we're gonna apply kavod abrios, because I think if you would then push back and say, "Oh, but Rabbi, let me tell you the story. this is a person for whom they never miss shul, or for whom they're suffering from real severe isolation, or for whom, you know, they really need to, there's something that they need, and like there's an emotional need to be there, I think it would totally change everything. And yes, the tefillin example is a very good one. Like, I think he was just saying, okay, when it comes to Kavod HaBriyos, I'm only willing to allow for using the restroom. That's all. We do not take this concept, this principle, that far. But there are other concepts. Yes, Rabbi Devorah.
No, I'm also wondering if, you know, because the statement of Kavod HaBriyos, the way it's said in the Gemara, it gives potentially huge latitude. And I think it's certainly in the popularly, right? It's something that, you know, people invoke a lot, whether they do it lamasa or not. It feels like when you say Kavod HaBriyos docha lo saseh serva Torah, like there's almost, it seems like there's the, there's a need, right? Or there's a felt need to say, hold on a second, right? Like it's not actually as expansive as you might want to think. Like you can't apply it absolutely universally to everything. You gotta, you know, think in your categories, right? And, you know, that seems to me to be a piece of this.
Yeah, I hear that. It feels like that, especially like, you know, I only put the source, you know, about that specific, you know, using the restroom, because that's what comes up in the postkin. But when you go through all this issues of Kavod HaBriyos and the Gemara, it does feel like, wow, you could pretty much do anything as long as
they read the Rabbanan, right? Yeah.
And, but then you see the postkin are like really like concerned about that.
Yeah.
It does feel like that. I hear you. And it's funny because what we're going to talk about next, the postkin don't discuss as much. And maybe that's why it's like there's more room, but there's much more room in there. Well, let's see. Yes, Aliza.
So I was thinking about this very much, and it came up like the exact situation I was thinking about is like, say you're going away for Shabbat and you're going somewhere without an Eruv. And obviously, like, I don't really ever recommend going places without an Eruv. But you end up in a situation where you're like going one place for shul, or one place for meals, or one place for a different meal, and you end up needing to carry something like a pad or a tampon with you. I feel like that's the kind of thing that's not covered in the sources and really should be, because that would be a clear case to me of Kavod HaBriyos.
Yeah.
But people might feel like they don't have any permission to do that when, in fact, they probably should have.
That's a great point. It seems to be totally analogous to the sources that we saw in terms of that it would be necessary. This is one of those examples of why it's important to have, you know, maharats in the halachic discussion, because that's why men hadn't thought of some of these issues, but I totally agree with you. Yeah. So, okay, so let's go now to this next topic, which I, you know, just think is so fascinating. And for me, it's been like a process of discovery over the last, you know, number of years of when I first kind of came across this topic, and I kind of delved deeper and deeper. And just last night, I really spent hours just because I got into it. I just got so into it late at night, really, especially because of some of your questions. I mean, you'll see, we're going to address them directly. And just like, it's always more fun to like learn more about this topic. I find it to be so interesting. And also because it speaks to me, it's one of those areas in halacha where I just like, yeah, it's so right. And I feel like this is so true. It just feels so true. So it is the issue of tiruf hadat. Tiruf hadat, the word tiruf is like the word treif, right? Torn, ripped, like are, you know, it's just, I think the most common translation is acute mental anguish. You know, just feeling totally out of sorts mentally and emotionally. So I put on the sheet, we're not going to go through obviously every source, but you have the right source, right? It says tiruf hadat. Okay, yeah? Okay, good. So I put a few sources there first just to, you know, show how like, the Torah, the Chumash, their tradition recognizes like how much bad news can have an impact on someone, like Sarah hearing about Yitzchak almost dying, or Vayapag Libo when Yaakov hears that Yosef is still alive. That's even for good news. You know, Ramban says, oh yeah, basically had a heart attack. That's what Yapag Libo means, because good news was so shocking. So we have this tradition that like what we hear about, what we, you know, our emotional well-being can have a real impact on our health. And when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, it really comes down to this source. This source is so important. It says as follows, and we'll read this one inside also, even though you already read it, but it's just, we're going to be referring to it a lot. Michti, Tana, We're allowed to, you know, help a woman give birth and call for the midwife to come from another place on Shabbos. So what does this include? What if she needs a candle? So this is obviously a very clear theorisa. You cannot light fire on Shabbos, but if she needs a candle, we can light a fire. You can light the candle for her. And if she needs oil to be brought for her, chavirta mavia l'shem biyad. V'im eina safek biyad, mavia besara. She can soak it in her hair to bring it with the shinur. V'im eina safek besara. But if that's not enough, mavia l'ava kli. Then bring it the regular way in a kli. That's also fine. It's totally normal carrying. Amar mar. Im haisa tricha l'ner, chavirta melekas l'saner. Pshita. That's obvious. We've already said that. What's this trying to teach us? Lo, tricha besuma. We need this for because of the case of a blind person. Let's just switch this over. It just lost it. It just moved pages now, right? Here. There. Now you see it in the Gemara again, right? Yes. Okay, good. So we need it for even for a blind person. You could even turn on the light. Light the candles for a blind person. Mahu detema, what would you have thought? Kiv dol chazia asur. We would have thought that since she can't see, it's forbidden. Kamash malan, asuve mitzvah date. But because it calms her down, Savra, she's going to think to herself, if something happens, chazya chaverta va'avda li. My friends will see and everything will be fine. I remember this so clearly. One time I was in our emergency room, there was a child who had a severe injury and just needed, you know, some stitches and it to be some settings. And they were in the emergency room. I was with them. It was the child and his mother and the doctor who was treating him. And she was doing the stitches in the room and the mother was kind of holding the baby, the child. And I was in there with them. And at one point, the doctor was very competent. She was doing great. But she hadn't turned on, you know, that light, that like emergency room type of light, that very bright lights they have. She hadn't turned it on. And she was doing fine there. You could see fine. And the mother said to her at one point, don't you want to turn the light on? And she says, no, I can see fine. I do this every day and we're good. And she said, no, but really, wouldn't it help you? And she said, no, I'm fine. And she said, well, for me, you know, it would help me. Like, it's just, I'm concerned. Like, I feel like you're going to miss something. She's like, okay, no problem. I'll turn it on. And she turned it on. I was like, wow, this is exactly the Gemara. It just made her feel better. And it wasn't on Shabbos when that happened, but I was thinking to myself, yeah, even if it was Shabbos, that would have been totally justifiable. And that's exactly the Mishnah. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah writes. He says here, the midwife knows exactly what she's doing. She's totally fine. Afal pikein kim lehu lechachamim. It's just people get concerned when it's dark and she'll just feel better. So even though it's not really needed for that act. And so based on that, and we won't read every single thing inside because there's some things I want to discuss more in depth, but Rav Moshe talks about, if a woman's going to the hospital in a cab actually writes the Hebrew word here, taxi. If he's going in a taxi, la hospital. could her husband or mother come along with her? And he at first writes, well, does she really need them? I mean, she's going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. And what are they going to do? They're not doctors. But then he writes there towards the middle. He says, you know what? Since we see this with Yoledes, that there's this danger of just the fear. So, you know what? The issue, of course, we will let this too, and this fits into that category of Yisuvei Das, and we would of course allow anyone to ride with her. I actually just saw this last night. I don't think this was in the sheet right since yesterday, but as I was searching for some of the other questions you had asked, I came across this response of Shevet Levi, which I just thought was really interesting. He was asked about, what about an epidural, which is literally for comfort, right? And he says, well, you know, an epidural, I mean, if there's bleeding, you know, in terms of the malacha, like let's say for the doctor, can you place an epidural? But then he says, you know what? During the week, I say, even though there might be some danger, and I don't know when you wrote this, it might have been a number of years ago, I still say, yeah, people can get an epidural, women can get an epidural. But what about Shabbos? Well, if they let turning on the fire, so too the epidural. I just thought that was interesting. Example, because it's like literally pain management. But yes, Aliza.
I was just going to say that for my first kid, the ER doctor told me to get an epidural even when I didn't want one, because he said there was a good chance I was going to need a C-section, and then the epidural makes it faster for them to get you under anesthesia if you need a C-section. And so it's not just for pain. It also, like, it improves their speed at getting the baby out if the baby's in distress.
Why do
you might have just been trying to talk me into the epidural.
Possibly. Why do you think he said L'chora and he didn't full on go on this?
Yeah, I was wondering that myself. I don't know. I don't know the reason. Because I think it's so obvious.
You right. You translated as if he had read Poskin, but he's
He wasn't that strong about the way he Poskined it. That's true. I just thought it was an interesting example, so I threw it in there. But yes, you're right. Rena.
Hi. Yeah. I guess my question is about Rav Moshe's tshuva and bringing someone to the hospital. Does anyone extend that past pregnant women? Just like that a person going to hospital in general might suffer more?
Yes. In fact, we saw that briefly in one of the sources on the first day, that there was a discussion about that. And yes, it's definitely not just for pregnancy, but this was just one example. Yeah. Good point. So a couple of other, you know, extensions. So far we're talking about pregnant women. So, I mean, Rena, that leads directly to, you know, let's start talking about, like, other ways that this concept can be applied. And in fact, let's leave Hilchos Shabbos for a moment. The Rambam we knew is the ultimate rationalist, right? We talked about the whole issue of refuah segulit with the Rambam. You know, the Rambam didn't like that. The Rambam in many ways felt like the purpose of the Torah is to get rid of idolatry and avodah zarah and pagan and, like, you know, irrationality. But look at what he writes. He paskins halacha lemaisa in the Yad Chazaka. He says, Misha nashko akrav or nachash, someone who gets bit by a scorpion or a snake, mutar lechosh al makom neshicha. You can actually do incantations over the place of the bite in order to relieve them. This is not medicine. This is more, you know, some kind of incantation to make it better. In order to put their mind at ease and to calm them down, to strengthen them. And the Rambam makes sure to add that. He makes sure to say, like, even though it's worthless, it will do nothing. But since the person is in danger, the rabbis allowed this in order to calm them down. And Rav Reuben Margolios writes in his commentary, I also just found this last night, just out of this, he quotes this, and he says, this is an Isra Deraisa, but Afapi came, Huter Lisuve Daite, Venir Mise Sadale Terba Makum Shiesha Hola, Gaguim Lirot Beno O Krovo. This could be probably used also for someone who's in the hospital and is lonely and wants their family member to be brought to them to help calm them down. That also should be permissible, but that this is just another great example of how far we would go. Another example, a Shabbos example, a classic Mishnah Berurah. Ninna hadals b'fnei. What if a child gets locked in a room? So they're gonna, let's say everything's gonna be fine. They should be okay, right? They're just locked in the room, but it's very scary for a child, right, to be locked in a room alone, afraid. So he says, Shover Adelis and what's you? Break the door down. Whatever you have to do, Alpha P Shuvatan, Kiminating, you're gonna be now breaking it into sticks and Shruyim the Malacha Shinasekimo Nisari, now you're doing a malacha tikkun kli, you're making a utensil there, that it could be used for firewood, whatever it is, a filu hachi, mutter hashvira shema yivata tinuk miyos, it could be like deathly fearful to the child, Velo Aminan, Shaefsha the Karkesha Tinok bag goes in. You could just, you know, slip food under the door, until you get the lock, but nope. You just break it down, do whatever's necessary, even if it's a Shabbos violation, in order to help the child not be afraid anymore. So now we have examples of avodah zarah, of helping children. Another example that comes up in Shulchan Aruch is a dying patient. Regarding a dying patient, the Shulchan Aruch says, Chole Shemes Lo Mes. What if someone is sick and they lose a relative? In modinoto, we don't tell them. Obviously, if you know the person, they would want to know. I mean, it's case by case. But in general, we don't tell them. Why? Shema titarif da'toala, because it will cause tirfa das, it will cause anguish, and they're already sick, and it's dangerous to them. Ve'in korin chaluka, we don't do kriya. Ve'in bochin, ve'in maspidim b'fanim, we don't cry in front of them, or do a hesped, shelo yishaver libo, because we don't want to break their heart. The Nishmas Avram goes so far as to say that ve'im shoel, yomar lo shiluchai, you would lie to them. They say, oh, how's so-and-so doing? I know they were sick. You'd say, oh, yeah, they're fine. And he even says, Mutar la'avel, this is Rishon Zalman Arbach, toch zayin, during Shiva, shel misas chosav, let's say someone's, you know, sibling died, let's say they cross avid, they want to go visit their father in the hospital, they can, lo yargish pitom v'yitzar, they don't want to scare them, mistama hu yotze gam ima na'alayim umelubash begadim karoi, they can put on their regular leather shoes and change their clothing to non-torn clothing, and go to the hospital and pretend everything's okay. Actually, there's a story in Rabbi Solution's book by the Lubavitcher Rebbe that when the Lubavitcher Rebbe's brother died, he intercepted his mother's mail for over 20 years so that she would never find out about it. That's just an interesting example of that. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, "Afilu meis aviv shalachola." What if the patient's father died, or imo, or mother? Ein modin lo the ein mashkichim alakan shalalomar. You don't tell them, even though they're not going to get to say Kaddish. The Bekuach Nefashos Kodem L'chol Davar, because this is life-saving, our concern for their mental and emotional well-being. The Beis Yosef, I thought was also interesting on this, he quotes this from the Ramban, he says, Kolo Shel Davar, Koshu Mishum Iske Ames, anything that's related to the dead, Ein Osin Lo Ad Shetetze Nafsho, we don't, until the person it has left this world. We don't tell them. And this is for people who are sick, so that we don't scare them. Aval habrim v'chazakim osim kivrehem v'tapikim. Then, of course, we could do so. This actually leads to one of my favorite sources that I think is so interesting. One other thing, real quick. So I'll just mention this. We won't read it inside, but what about, you know, we treat people differently if they're ghosts, right? We don't touch them. They're ghosts. We don't move them. We handle them more carefully. So the Nishma Safram also says, what if you have a ghost who, it will scare them to know that they're a ghost. You don't want to tell them how sick they are. So you can actually handle them differently. And Rav Moshe goes so far as to say, if you have a triage situation with two patients in the emergency room, one whose life you can save, the other one who's a ghost, but if you don't save the ghost, they will realize that they're being left behind because they are dying. You should actually favor the one who's dying in order to not scare them. Which is really interesting. Chuva, yes. I see a hand up.
Also, sorry, I'm without camera because my son is like not falling asleep. But regarding what you said about the ghost, I remember when my grandmother, Zichron Alibacha, was dying, mamash, like in the hospital. So I was there with my sister and we were like holding her hand and singing with her. And I have a Haredi uncle and he came and he's saying that we are killing her and we're terrible and we should get out of the hospital. We're not allowed to touch her. We're not allowed to hug her. We can't do anything because it's mamash, mamash kaze, anachnu avrim belo tirtzach. And he made it like very, very crazy. It was a very terrible time. So I'm just saying it's not only if they realize sometimes holding and touching may improve a person's feeling.
Yes, exactly. And many of the posts can distinguish between touching that's kind of like muttering, you know, like aggressive, and touching that's loving, embracing, that actually is comforting and helpful to the person. So yeah, that's a good point. Yes, Dalia.
Is this ever used in terms of like informing doctors about whether or not they should tell people what their expectant like life expectancy is or prognosis? I mean, you're telling people,
Yes, definitely. Some people want to know. I know that. I mean, it's just interesting. I think it all depends on each person. But my predecessor here at Cedars-Sinai, Rabbi Levi Meir of blessed memory, wrote in one of his books. He wrote about that exact question. And he was arguing that, you know, you shouldn't tell people because it's too scary. And he told a story that one time there was a psychiatrist here at this hospital who had a very difficult diagnosis. And the doctor knew, and the doctor had told the rabbi how bad it was, but he was trying to be gentle with how he told the patient and just kind of sugarcoat a little bit. And one day he was in the room with the patient and the doctor, and the patient kept saying, I'm a psychiatrist. I can handle it. Other people can't, but I can. Give it to me straight. I want all the details. And the doctor said how bad it was. And he said that patient died that night. Rabbi Meir, and he said he thinks it was because he went into like a horrible depression after he heard that. He got very upset, and then he died. And he thinks that, you know, it was related. So anyways, it's different for every person. We can't just say never tell anyone anything. Like, obviously, sometimes people need to know and want to know, and just sometimes it's how you say it. It's a whole other topic, but it's a difficult issue. But yes, Aliza.
So Dalia Narox was talking about the difference between like somebody who could get better and somebody who's never going to get better. Like, obviously, yeah, people deal differently with dementia patients, but like, you know, if there's a dementia patient and you like tell them that their relative died, then like the next day they've forgotten and you have to tell them again and they're sort of like reliving it.
Yes.
Right. That's one case. But I think most people, if you ask them, would probably say that they would rather know.
Right. I do agree with that. So, you know, a lot of times it comes down to how you share. One time, the only time I've so far been had asked to be like an expert witness in a court case was there was a family who was demanding that the doctors not tell their mother the severity of her situation. And the doctors felt they had to tell her. And their argument was, I think, very good, that there were some decisions that had to be made about her treatment. And if there's decisions that have to be made, she needs to know all the facts. There's also a difference between like, okay, it's one thing if there's no decisions to be made, so maybe you can sugarcoat things. But if you have to actually decide about surgeries or chemotherapies or, you know, hospice, like, it helps to know all the details. And so anyways, it's a very complicated issue. But I love this source, this Chochmas Adam. You saw it already. I put it on the sheet, but it's just worth reading again because it's so interesting. And also to me, it's when I read this, sometimes like one of the sad things when I think about like what we lost in the Holocaust, sometimes you think about like these ancient Jewish communities that have been going for centuries and then they got uprooted and then certain customs did not survive. So he writes, the Chochmas Adam, HaMinhag v'kehilos kedoshos v'befrat v'kehila kedosha Berlin, kishe adam chole b'yom gimel l'cholim, just every single person, on day three, hochin olav gabei b'kecholim or shar anashim v'omrim lo, ata yadata shekein hu atikun, you know, this is just what we do here, v'haminhag etzo kol l'cholim, we do this for everyone. U'lechein ein lecha lidog, don't worry, mizek klum, u'lechein ta'ase tzava, it's time, everyone should have a will, an advanced directive, you know. Ma shetirtze, ma she'ata chayev, barachem chayevim lecha, what do you want, what do you owe people, what others owe you, v'od homim lo, hizvade, you should also say vidui. Ki kolam hizvade al cheta'av, mochlin lo, v'kivan she'ba'osan akilos, amin again, ein achole doeg mizek klum. Since this is what we do, there's no reason to be afraid. Anyways, just an interesting application. But let's go further. I mean, we're just showing many, many different applications. Dalia, you mentioned already, one of you mentioned this Minchas Yitzchak, this classic question. I have been asked many times as a rabbi in a hospital, do I have any like people would call like for COVID tefillin or like, you know, tefillin that can be, you know, disposed of afterwards? Because sometimes people are told they're in a radiation room or whatever it is, and they're told if you put on tefillin in there, it will have to be destroyed after. So the common question is, you know, can I put on tefillin when it's going to have to be then destroyed? And the Minchas Yitzchak first said no, that it's better not to, right? B'zayim gadol shall sreifas tefillin. He says, no, well, just don't put on tefillin for a few days. But then, I thought it was just so interesting, the process. He says, then amnam nisararti mitama chachamechan. Then someone said to me, wait a second. Im maniyat tefillin yachol ligrom tsar l'chol, but they're echole. And this is going to cause them emotional pain. Shenafsho aguma alav. It's really hard for them. The ish yared v'charei, the person who is very God-fearing, ahai afshar lekayim mitzvah, so they really want to put on their tefillin. V'choshi shalom v'hiyos b'chlal karkafta lo menach tefillin. They want to be like a person that never wore tefillin. Chas v'shalom. V'chalisha sadas hazu. And this weakening of their emotions, tuchal lipol gamkim chalishas habrius shal achola. Az yesh lehakel lahavi imo tefillin. Then you should bring the tefillin. He also says, and actually I found it. I was looking for this last night. I also want to add it to this. I'll show you what the Rav Cherebi said about this. He says, and this is based in Shas, Amar Rav Levi, Konin Kinyan Mishchiv Mira. This is another sugya that you can get a Kinyan on Shabbos from someone who's dying. Elish Shema, Tatariyaf Daito Alav, so therefore you don't have to. And so it's just another example of how we're concerned for Tirif Adas, and therefore you could let them wear tefillin, even though they're going to have to destroy it after. He says again here, it's Mishum, Mistiavta, Mistiavta, Daito, Shachola, And he concludes by kind of sort of hedging a little bit. He then says, Pshita de lamaisa inyan ze tali b'mitzius. It all depends on that person. Vein lahaka rak im nizbar b'vade de nogele b'kuach nefesh. You only should be lenient if you realize that it's really, really distressing. It could even be life-threatening. V'hine after v'yoledes chazin. Even when it came to giving birth, we saw the mishum misav te daita sharinan af malacha de'araisa shal lakasner. Asher yoledes b'atzma enam b'makeshes klum. She didn't ask for it, but you could do anything. Not every case is the same. The Labak Trebi, I found the quote from him, is from Igros Kodesh, where he was asked by someone who had a catheter and an ileostomy, and they were afraid that can they now not learn Torah? They have this bag connected to them, and they can't pray, and you know it smells. And he said to them, you know what? Even though that might be the halacha technically, Hamania mitzvila v'limud Torah v'adai tipo chalishus hadas v'mila gam chalishus habrius shalachola v'kaman yanim hetiru mitamzeh. And then he gives some examples. So anyways, but let's go. So what I added here, just the next couple sources, are some of the things that you had asked about. What about going to the hospital for a family to visit on Shabbos? And what if the patient is not alert? And then we'll talk about music also, because that also came up. And that will conclude with that. So the Shevet Levi has a tshuva about people going to the hospital, family members, even driving. He says, "V'yeshomer de'lo pligi hagadolim de'im yesh chashash al mamash shel tiruf hadas achola yesh l'tadei b'zeif." So you could really, the person's going to be scared by being alone on Shabbos in the hospital. "V'gam be'emes lo barali im haprima gadi be'emes kivam zeif v'chol ofen ein dati lahater stama iser Torah b'shvil achola shelo yashal levad." You need to have some kind of proof, or like he has a high bar. We're actually going to see a lower bar in a second, but it could theoretically be within the realm of possibility that it could be allowed. But then you look at the Nishmas Avraham. He says, Rishon Zalman Arbach said to him that the famim mutar afilu lachal Shabbos b'isrei Torah im trichum lekach lamashu kadei lahavi haben lifnei abba. So a parent needs their child. Im yesh be'emes suffik shiatarif da tov yistakein. Adkan, the rest we said, Ulechain Nishlavram adds, Bechol Mikra Mikra Chayavim Yishkol B'mozne Tzedek Ma Mutar Ma'asur La'asot Avor Chola Kazeh. So there is definitely room to allow. In fact, I'll just tell you a story real quick that I remembered from this, and I asked to see someone ask a question. I had a case where we had a woman who was in her late 30s who was unfortunately dying from cancer. She was still alert and strong, but she was definitely, it was very bad. And they lived about 2.5-3 miles from the hospital. And also it was in the summer, so hot. And her husband had the following question. And this was someone, it's important for the story, who was very learned. I remember he spent a lot of years learning in the Mir Yeshiva, and he was a very learned guy. And his question he was concerned about was his children. They had a number of children who were young. And it was really hard for them that, like, he was trying to keep life normal for his children as much as possible as they're going through a horrible situation. Their mother's in the hospital. He was trying to be with them for Shabbos meals and take them to shul and trying to keep their life normal. At the same time, he wanted to be with his wife, right? She's in the hospital dying. So he was saying to me on Friday, I don't know how to do this. Like, how I can't be two places at once. And the walk back and forth, I mean, I'm going to do some walking back and forth, but it's an hour and a half walk each way. You know, like I'm going to have to choose, like, how to split up my Shabbos. So I said, well, why not just take a cab both ways? That it'll be much faster. You'll be able to spend much more time with her. He was like, oh, how could you justify that halachically? There's no justification. So I said, it's tiruf hadas. I said, I see it myself. She's very lonely. She's very scared right now. You really help her when you're with her. Really, I see. It really lifts her spirits. And you need to be with her as much as possible. He said to me, what's that? What's tiruf hadas? And at first I was like, wow, like people don't know about this concept. And I said, you know, Duvidaita. And he was like, no, tell me more. I said, you know, the Mishnah about the woman giving birth and you can light the candle for her. He was like, oh, do we paskin like that? And I was like, you know what? Ask your rabbi and see what he says. So he said, because I said, he saw he was like really not secure about that. And he told me later in the day, he's like, oh, I asked a rabbi. He said, yeah, totally. He said, do it. I'm taking the cab back and forth. It was a great idea. And I thought to myself, like, wow, people don't know about this. This is, and it is a real issue. And he did it. And it was really, he said, my kids had a basically normal Shabbos. And I was with my wife most of Shabbos. Like, we did it. We managed. I was able to go back and forth. And I think that that's exactly like what Rishon LeZalman was saying there. I think it was, you know, that was that case. And I think that it's important. I think people don't know about it. I think education is needed on this topic. But what about, one of you asked yesterday, and this is what I did some research on this last night, and I thought it was interesting. What if the patient is not alert? Is that the same? I mean, it's one thing in this case, that woman, she really appreciated it. Her husband was there, it helped her. But what if the person was in a coma? What if the person is not alert whatsoever? So in that case, it does seem like it's much more difficult to justify. But there is one approach, and this came up with you yesterday. But so the Yasra Abdi says as follows. Lastly, I have one question about this source too. Maybe some of you can help me understand it. He says, Asan lenido lidan. So in this case of going to the hospital on Shabbos for a patient that's not alert, da'chola ba'atzmo lo bikesh. The patient didn't ask for it. Rak beta cholim mi atzmo darish dos. Da'chola hu b'lo hakara. The hospital suggested it only. Vada de ein makum lahat b'shum ofen. That cannot be allowed. Afilo al yedei goy lahavi krovav b'motzei Shabbos. Okay, that's what I don't understand. Why wouldn't it be allowed on motzei Shabbos unless it means they started driving on Shabbos or something like that? That must be what it is, right? I see you're nodding. So they for them to drive on Shabbos, pick you up, and then you're there after Shabbos. De ad kan lo hitiru b'kiyotzei b'zeh rak b'mevakesh acholah. Only if the patient needs it. B'shum b'chashash shelo tetarif da'ato. V'lo kim b'nidu nidan she'acholah hu lo b'kesh. V'gam li hakara. That even if the family members come, the patient doesn't feel it. Although, personally, I don't know if that you can always assume that the patient doesn't feel it. I think oftentimes the patient does recognize it, and we know that there's, you know, locked-in syndrome. There's patients who we see on MRIs that they are experiencing their loved ones, and there is something better. And the Shevet Halevi says in that tshuva, v'gam yidush im roim bebeit cholim she'ein mi sheshov b'sholom acholim. So there also could be what we talked about yesterday, just simply that the patient will be taken better care of by the fact that there's someone there advocating for them. And so I think you could justify it. I just think it becomes a little harder to justify. It's a higher bar, but I do think it could be justified. This is what I found in looking into it, that there are some poskim that don't like it as much. And I do understand it, because the whole point of Tirif Hadas is that's what that person needs at that time. And it's hard to know what a person needs if they are not alert. But and the situation obviously is one in which the hospital called them for some reason. Maybe the situation is deteriorating. So I think you could find ways to justify it. What I found in the post game researching it, they were not thrilled about it. But I think there's definitely room. Yes, Dahlia, when my daughters were in the NICU, one of the nurses told me that the babies that have someone with them all the time are more likely to survive. Yeah, so interestingly, in Rabbi Ravioni's book, he has an appendix also on Tirif Hadas, and he has a whole study there that where he shows, he quotes a number of medical studies that also show the impact of having loved ones nearby. And we saw this during COVID, the impact of patients not having family members allowed to be with them had a massive negative impact on their health. And so, I think we can make that argument and make the case for even someone who's not alert to be able to receive that support. So, yeah, I'm with you. I wanted to do a little research, so I'm sharing with you what I found. But, yeah, I think we can definitely make the case. Sarit.
A little bit of just reflecting on some of the stories that you've been telling us, and how like your role as a rabbi is to make the family of the patients feel like what they're doing is within the realm of halacha, which is just so interesting. And it made me think, like, at what point do we treat the close relatives of a chole as themselves being potentially in the category of a chole in terms of mental health? Like, would you poskin, let's say, like, this husband, he is, he's in a place of potential, like, sakana, if he can't go visit his wife all of Shabbos, like, that the mental health aspect for the family member is important and then permits them to do things for the chole. Do you see, like, the someone in a coma, like, we may not be able to poskin that you can go visit them because they won't know, but what about the, like, the spouse or the child for whom not being able to see their parent for 25 hours will then spiral into a problem for that?
Yes, I totally see that. And we have all the time, again, I'm sure every hospital, patients whose their loved ones end up in the emergency room through the course of their of dealing with their illness, how emotionally difficult it can end up being, and how and we know that emotions impact our health. Yeah, I think that's important. That's why I think this category, this whole discussion of Tirufa Das and mental anguish is like so relevant. It's so this is why, you know, in amongst chaplains, we sometimes discuss like, can a chaplain, we've talked about doctors, you know, driving to the hospital, can a chaplain drive to the hospital on Shabbos? And a number of different chaplains, we've all asked different rabbis, and what we've gotten back is basically there could be ways, obviously, it's different than a doctor. Yes, that's definitely true. But there could be situations where it's justified. That, you know, Nachman Rabinovich has a really interesting tshuva in his volume of tshuvas about a social worker going to a pigua on Shabbat to provide support for the people there. You know, and he actually quotes that Rambam that we read before. Now that I remember, that's where I got that Rambam from that tshuva. And he says, look, if you can do incantations that the Rambam thinks is a total Isser Deraisa, but it makes people feel better, so you can drive on Shabbos to be there with someone to help them feel better. Exactly. So this actually leads to the last thing I wanted to share with you, and then also I want to hear more, we can discuss more, but because someone, one of you asked this, I don't remember who, I apologize, but it just made me think a lot about it a lot, and so this is what I really spent a lot of time researching last night. It was really fun to research. It took me hours, but it was totally worth it because it was so interesting. The question of music, and the reason why I was interested also is because I think one of you asked about the TV, actually, leaving the TV on. And the reason it was interesting to me is because patients do ask me about this a lot. But I never really researched it properly. I've always just kind of, you know, helped them kind of decide based on who they are, if that's really necessary. And I've kind of been negative about it, probably, if I'm being honest. Like, I've probably been kind of sort of discouraged people to do it. But I wanted to just bring a fresh look at it. What about leaving the TV on in the hospital room for whole shots, or in one, at a bedroom or whatever, it doesn't have to be the hospital room, or playing music? So first, I looked around, and I looked, you know, in indexes and maftechot of the different svarim I have, and I found it in one place. Then I found something else. But let me first show you what I found in one place, and we'll analyze this together. But then I don't want to spend too much time, because then I want to show you something else. But let's just spend 5 minutes on this one. So this was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So interesting. And then I found something that's going to actually put this into context, which is really interesting. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, this is from Shulchan Shlomo. His work on Shulchan Aruch says as follows. So it's really quoting him, right? So his students wrote this, and so the bold is his words, and the non-bold is what his students filled in the blanks. So it says, so we know that when we said kasav de afapi de hadlaka saner ikra ina lerefua afapi came mechalim in our siman in Shulchan Aruch about lighting the candle on Shabbos. It's not, we don't light the candle for her health, right? But yet we still light it. So it's something that's not needed directly for a person's health. But yet it still helps them, and therefore it's allowed. Mishum de kim lehu l'rabanan de yisuva daita de yoledes hu milsa de mistachna. That being afraid can cause the yoledes to be in danger. Now we've also seen it can also cause children and men. You know, everyone basically is fits down to the category of yisuvi das. Bab lefachi. Shaninim she'af she'achachma omeres, even though the midwife says she'or, or kol ma'i de'avid la hu tov, anything she needs is good, ve'ein tzarech yoter, v'kol mako matirin kedei la'hafiz da'ata shel yoledes, we do it, even though they said she didn't need it, because it could help her. L'fi zeh l'chora, im ha'chol ha'masukan dorish lirot et bano. What if the chola says, I want to see my children, or bito, or kedoma? You know, they're in the hospital. They want the kids to be with them. They're afraid. Gam Kenya Tirulahem Lechalo Shabbos Velavo Elav Kedei Lahapis Dato. This we already seen in a few tshuvas, that to bring one's children to see them, that can be permissible on Shabbos. Ach, Yitakin She'ein Zeno Gei Le'etzem Amachla Le'etzem Atipul. That's the seeing their children is not part of their medical treatment, but it's for emotional well-being. Vatu Imachol Le'ohev Lishmo Radio. What if the patient loves to listen to the radio? Ukedoma V'dorish as Zeva Shabbos, and they ask for that. V'chimutzal Yivtoach Tape. Or they're not getting the fun of her to sing in front of them. The mistaber shedino ke adam bari she omer she choshig achshav lishma radio v'im lo yeshmiu lefanav pu yamus mirov tsar. What if they say, you know, I need to hear this music or I will die from the pain. V'tarchin harbe bechol ele ki sof sof achola gam came mitzuv al Shabbos. But they have to keep Shabbos, so they can't just do whatever they want, right? Ulam efshar the mikom akom hum estakin. But on the other hand, they're in danger. Im lo yaviu lo v'shniyim imi It's different if someone says, oh, I need to engage in Isurei Arayos or else I'll die. That we're not going to allow. But this is different. This is to hear music. This is for Tir Fadas. When it comes to Shabbos, and here's where he concludes. Where this is, okay, this is frustrating, but I'm going to show you something really interesting about this. He says, Yesh Trisha Shahid Betzedek Higayon, something that is logical, Kigon Lirot Ben Ubat, like seeing their children. Ubein Drisha Lo Tzodeket, but or an incorrect desire, Kigon Lishmoa Radio. And that we cannot allow. So in other words, we can allow something that's not needed for their health care if it makes sense, like seeing their children, but not if it doesn't make sense, like hearing music. That was what Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach said. Okay, so when I first found that, I was like, okay, so that, I guess, I mean, this is the only source I could find. This is not allowing listening to the radio on Shabbos. Then I remembered, and we've been talking about Rabbi Yoni's book, but I don't have it yet because it's not available in America yet. So another reason why you in Israel are lucky. You get the good books first. But then I remembered that like 3 years ago, he sent me his chapter on Hilchos Shabbos. He was just sending it out to lots and lots of people to review. And I was like, oh, let me search my email if I still have that chapter. And I searched his name and I searched Shabbos and I found it. And he has a section on this topic. And he says as follows, and I thought this was so great. And he also refers to this tshuva of Shlomo Zalman that we just saw. And it's so, so interesting. And it says exactly what I thought it was going to say. So he says, Musica b'Shabbat. Misha, so, and I'll just say real quick, this is from 3 years ago. So it's very possible that he's edited this since then. So it's just a draft. So keep that in mind. But he says as follows. Misha sova midika'on klini, right? Major depressive disorder, clinical depression. Veshmias musika, I see there's a comment. It's okay. Thank you. Someone offered to send me the book. I'll get it as soon as it's available. Plus, I have half of it in my email already from him. But I'll get it as soon as I can. But thank you for the offer. So someone who has clinical depression, Veshmiat musika misayat biyadav, and it will help them to hear music. So he's going to have two sections on this, depending on how severe it is. He says first, Yachol hashir musika deluka mi'erv Shabbat b'machshir gezera acher. Right. First of all, you could just leave it on from Friday, so you don't have to actually violate any prohibitions. Ulechaber ozniut l'machshir. And what if you would just plug in earphones and then you could just put them on when you need them? So that would be a great solution, right? You could listen to the music and ulecharchiv et ha ozniut bechol et shiargish torach b'kach. And you can listen to the music. And he has a really interesting footnote. We obviously won't go through it now, but I'll put this, you know, when I email this to you, this will be in the source sheet. But basically it says, even doing, you know, weekday things on Shabbos is allowed if it's an oneg for you. And music is especially so. We have a strong tradition of the power of music in Jewish tradition. And we know they used to hire non-Jewish musicians for weddings on Shabbos because it used to be the tradition was to have weddings on Friday night so they could combine the Shabbos meal with the wedding meal, you know, and then they would have the Shabbos wedding suda Friday night, and they would all, you know, enjoy it. And the music was seen as a way of gladdening the bride and the groom. And we see that even though it's not common today, it makes sense. There's a desire to hear music. And so that would be one example you could do. B'dom l'kach, or what you could do is, misha tepila b'televizia, someone who wants to watch TV, or, it's a massive footnote, or b'machshev, or the computer, misayet lo v'umargiyoto, and this will help them, make them feel better, yachog, also, l'hashiret elu, d'lukim, u'paralim, erev Shabbat, leave it on from before Shabbat, and it's not a room or something, or shiadliku al yedei sha'on ha'mechaven l'kach, m'yedetne Shabbat, you leave it on from before Shabbat, v'yitzfu b'shabbat, and then you could watch it on Shabbos, ach, yan michu, et hakol kedei lo lafria et avirat Shabbat. Obviously, some way have the volume covered so that it won't bother the environment of your neighbors. The Yesh Machmir, and some are Machmir, says he asked Rav Zilberstein about this, and Rav Zilberstein disagreed. This was someone who has, suffering from depression, that he's saying that there could be ways of allowing. And then he says, Misha Sova Medikon Klini, someone else has major depressive disorder, the Sova Ikvot Kach Mimachshavot, they have suicidal ideation. Not, he says, not in a category where they're actually actively suicidal, because in that case you could do anything, obviously, at any time. That's Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. He says, Ach lo berama kazush hanu felas likadei safik ruach nefesh, but they are having suicidal thoughts. So this is much more serious of a depression right now that they're experiencing. It says, O ad kadei hash basa mashmutit shal tifkudo batumi markazim v'chashumim v'chayav. Right? They're really doing damaging things to themselves and thinking about their life here. V'chein hafra acheret shemevidi dekha, or other kinds of disturbances in their life. He says, and for them, let's say, shmiat musika misayat v'yadav, and it will help them to hear music, or watch TV, or use their computer. And the lo hishir machshir the lo k'mir, and he did not leave it on from before Shabbos. Banu l'machlokas poski darenu ha'achronim legabi iser sigirat ma'agal chashmali. You did this last week. You probably know, more familiar with this sugya than me, but now we come to the issue of what level of iser is using electricity on Shabbos in Asur, Midir Raisar, Midir Rabbanan, Umayim Ahus Isser Dayan, what's the source of the Isser? Ulam, Bishinui, when you use a Shinui, Yesh Mokum Lahatir, in all cases, right? Remember we said yesterday that even some allow for a Chol She'ein Bo Sakana, even allow Shinui for a Deir Raisa, right? So even if electricity is a Deir Raisa, we could, Bishinui, Yesh Mokum Lahatir, Af Isser Deir Raisa, the Torah Chol She'ein Bo Sakana, V'chein Yeh Hadin, even that could be for turning on the TV or Machshav B'Shabbat. So v'yesh matirim af lo shinui, some that he asked aloud without a shinui, v'yesh asru im lo b'malkom b'koch nefesh. Some said, okay, if there's no b'koch nefesh, you can't do this, but there are many who allow this, and he builds up the case for why it should be allowed. Fascinatingly, he then quotes in the footnotes, there's so much here I can't put it all, but he quotes that story of that psak of Rishon Mazalman. See, when I read that story of Rishon Mazalman, I was shocked by his conclusion. Because why is seeing one's children logical and listening to music not logical? Listening to music is logical. That is helpful to people. I was like surprised. Like, why doesn't he think listening to music could be helpful? So look at what he says here. I thought this is so great. It's from this Sefer Yerushalayim Mimodeh, I think it was. So he says, Sha'alti es Rav Shlomo Zalman, Chol Mesut Kanche Ohev Lishmo Musika. Can I turn on music for this patient who loves music? He responded to me, Bani or Banai Yatir et Zos. My children do allow this, Ani mit kasher, but I don't. Why? This fear. Ani gadalti b'metzius sheba la'adam chole yeshnam tzrachim kamo chimum. When I grew up, there were certain things that a patient needed. They needed things warmed up. Ocha v'shtia, right? Eating food. But these newfangled needs that people in our generation have, he says, hapsikolajim, these psychiatric needs, tzrichim nashim kamo musika, these, you know, emotional needs like music, ani mevinche machin tzrichim, I get it, I do get it, but they're not, I don't relate to it. So, okay, I'm sure you're right, about kasha lime od la'atirotam, but I just can't allow them. I thought that was so interesting. He basically was just saying, I don't get it, so I didn't allow it. But if it's helpful for you, yeah, you should do it. It just added so much more to that psak that I first showed you when he said, yeah, you can see your children, but you can't listen to music. And I think Rav Yoni has built here sort of the case for like, okay, you know, obviously we're not saying just turn everything on. He does prefer, right, you know, turn off from before Shabbat or put in headphones, and then you just put on headphones whenever you need, or use a shinui. But there's definitely... And if it was a higher level need, like someone's really, you know, suicidal, there's a chance of that's life threatening, then of course, do everything. But for whoever asked about music or TV on Shabbos, I think, and especially when I'll send you this, he goes through very detailed footnotes there, supporting his, making his case there. But I think it really does flow directly out of the discussion we've had today about Tirfadas, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Yes, Rabbi Nitha.